Good afternoon. Let's try that again. Good afternoon. Very well done. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to this wonderful audience filling this beautiful room on this really not so beautiful Saturday afternoon. Thank you to Jahan, my great friend, who, when I first arrived in the House of Representatives in 2011, you were a great teacher to me, and you've become a friend and an extraordinary fighter for this community, and I treasure that. Thank you to my many other friends in the audience and to the various sponsors for putting together an extraordinarily important discussion on an extraordinarily important set of topics on an extraordinarily important weekend that I think is a weekend that we ought to take to think carefully about the real and challenging legacy of Dr. King, and then we ought to make sure that we live that legacy every single day of every single week, not just one weekend of a year. My name is Daniel Biss. I'm state senator in the 9th District. I live in Evanston with my wife Karen, our two children, Elliot and Theodore, who are in second, fourth grade in our neighborhood public schools. I'm running for governor of Illinois. And I'm going to take a very short period of time to tell you a little bit about my background and then focus on the issues that Representative Gordon Booth wanted us to talk about because they matter tremendously. I came into politics sort of from an odd spot. I used to teach math. No explanation. But I was teaching math at the University of Chicago and not envisioning doing anything else and saw a nation rushing off to war based on lies, a nation spinning out of control, a movement of people rising up in the streets to do something about it, and felt that I had to be a part of that, felt that I couldn't just be the person to stand back and be upset and complain, but instead had to lean in and do what I could to make a better society. Grabbed hold of a clipboard, started knocking on doors, and over time fell in love with the idea that if you built people into powerful movements, those movements could build a just society. In fact, that those movements are the only way to build a durable, just society. And that observation changed my life, led me eventually to run for the legislature, unsuccessfully the first time, which is the best education there is, by the way. I was blessed enough to come back a second time, have another chance, and I've been serving in the Illinois General Assembly, first in the House and now in the Senate, since 2011, learning about how our state works and how it doesn't, learning about who serves there and how we can work together to move the ball forward, learning about what needs to be changed fundamentally if we're going to make the types of progress that our state deserves. And so now let me address these fundamental questions of economic equity and opportunity and of criminal justice in the state of Illinois, because we have a lot of work to do. First of all, I bring regards from my running mate, Letisa Wallace. She's a state representative from the city of Rockford, who's been serving in the legislature for several years, fighting hard on these issues. And she asked me to share with you that when she first had the privilege of chairing a committee in the Illinois House, she took the opportunity to create a committee that works specifically on economic justice and equity. Because these are the core issues that break our state. These are the issues that brought me into this race. These are the issues that I think we, in this moment, after suffering through 3 years of broken government under Bruce Rauner and decades before that of a government that only worked for a few of us, have the opportunity to fundamentally tackle. So what does that look like? First of all, let me talk directly about our broken and racist criminal justice system. We have allowed, over the course of decades, now over the course of generations, a racist system of mass incarceration to take over the way we think about criminal justice, so that criminal justice is no longer about restoration, is no longer about even public safety, but is about punitive actions targeted at specific communities, tearing apart neighborhoods, tearing apart families, and creating cycles of poverty. Because the connection between poverty and our broken justice system is profound. And so Letisa and I have laid out a bold agenda on criminal justice reform with a series of strong proposals to change the way we build our justice system so that it is once again about restoration and rehabilitation and reentry rather than being punitive. So there's a lot of components to this. We'll fight to legalize the recreational use of marijuana and end the racist war on drugs so we can finally once again view the drug crisis that we have in this state, which is a crisis, as a public health crisis, not a criminal crisis. We're going to end for-profit policing. We're going to end the completely unjust practice wherein the state is allowed to sue returned citizens to recover the cost of incarceration. Think about that one with me for a second. You make a mistake, you're incarcerated. During the time that you're incarcerated, God forbid, your mother passes away and you inherit $15,000, which upon your release will be the only thing standing between you and homelessness. The only thing giving you perhaps a few months to find a job in the legal economy. And then instead of simply supporting you in those efforts, the state goes to court to sue you to recover the cost of incarcerating you as though it was a hotel. It's immoral. It's immoral. I passed legislation to ban that practice, and Bruce Rauner, you shouldn't be surprised, but I was. Bruce Rauner vetoed that bill. Bruce Rauner vetoed that bill. When I'm governor, I'm going to sign that bill into law and end that unjust practice. And we're going to end cash bail and the use of excessive punitive fees as a mechanism of criminalizing poverty. What we need in a criminal justice system is one that's based on safety, that incarcerates people based upon the extent to which they're needed to be incarcerated to keep the public safe, as opposed to as punishment for not being wealthy enough to afford able to post bail or to afford a fee or to pay an interest payment. We need to rethink our sentencing system drastically. It has become fashionable these days to talk about thinking about sentences for low-level drug offenses and other nonviolent offenses, and man, that's important. But let me tell you a hard political truth. A hard political truth. Mass incarceration isn't only about the fact that some people who shouldn't be incarcerated are incarcerated. Mass incarceration is about the fact that for decades we've increased sentences, increased mandatory minimums, moved sentences from 5 years to 10 years and then 20. And we need to have a really hard set of political conversations looking at our entire sentencing system to bring it to a place where it's what's necessary to preserve public safety, but not excessive so as to increase costs, so as to increase time away from society, and so to make it much harder to rehabilitate people. And by the way, when we make these bold changes, these bold transformations to our justice system, there will be a lot of people still incarcerated who were sentenced under the old system. There's one person in Illinois who can do something about that. That's the governor. We need to take a comprehensive look at how the governor's clemency power ought to be used to reverse some of the changes that were made in the olden days based upon a broken sentencing system. We need to work on community policing and to enhance police accountability. We need to make sure that our police forces are better diversified, and that has to stem from a complete rethinking about how we do recruitment for police officers. And finally, we need to think about what happens both inside the justice system and after reentry, after citizens return, to make rehabilitation possible. And that begins with appropriate access to mental health care and substance abuse treatment inside the justice system, since after all, such a high percentage of people incarcerated are suffering from mental illness and it's often and, substance abuse challenges. And we are so uneven in the extent to which we make appropriate services available inside the justice system. And then upon reentry, we have to continue to wrap around services for mental health treatment, substance abuse, and housing. And now let's talk about a job. Let's talk about adequate access to education and vocational training inside the justice system and the continued removal of bars to employment for returned citizens. A felony conviction should not come with a lifetime sentence to unemployment. It should not come with a lifetime sentence to unemployment, but too often it does in our system today. We have to remove those bars to employment, and we have to do it in a way that ensures that every returned citizen has the opportunity to be a participant in a legal economy and in a safe neighborhood with adequate supports. Now, we haven't talked much yet about economic development and economic equity, and I think these two issues are profoundly, profoundly related. It doesn't escape me that Peoria has been talked about by some as one of the worst places in America for African Americans. It doesn't escape me that we have profound segregation in a number of metropolitan areas throughout this state and profound inequity of educational and economic opportunity It's time to acknowledge that we have seen communities victimized by decades of disinvestment, decades of dollars being pulled out, schools being closed, the manufacturing plant shuts down, another social service provider shuts its doors. Every dollar that has been there before leaves, and when the dollars leave, people follow them, and with the people go opportunity. The solution to disinvestment is investment. The solution to a lack of opportunity and a lack of hope is for the state to step directly in the neighborhoods and communities that are most in need of economic opportunity in this state, and directly put people to work. Not with a theory, not with a job training program, not with an idea, but a job. And when the state takes that first action, then you can spark more economic opportunity and hope that others follow, but others will not come in first after the generations of disinvestment that we have created. And so Letisa and I are running on a bold agenda, and our state needs a bold agenda. And communities that have been left behind for these now several generations are in need of a bold agenda. And the only way to enact a bold agenda that is so different from what our state has seen before is if we build a movement of people across the state to demand it. And that's where the people in this room come in. It is time to transform our politics. It is time for us to stand up together to demand real equity and real reform. And I am honored to have a chance to be with you today to discuss that.
Thank you so much. If you would be willing to, please give us your 5 minutes in this space to discuss your policies, your specific policies and strategies around reentry, and what are the things that you're going to put in place for crime survivors in communities, particularly of color, and those that have had that have seen that lack of investment.
Yeah, thank you very much for that question. And there's a lot in there, and I'll do my best in 5 minutes. So when it comes to reentry, we've touched on some of these points, but they're so important. I want to go delve in a little bit more. If someone is suffering from mental illness or substance abuse problems and then is incarcerated without treatment for those problems, the expectation that we should all have is the person will be released with less of an opportunity to participate in the legal economy. That's just common sense. So let's make sure that we're really inside the justice system, providing adequate access to services, providing adequate access to mental health services, providing adequate access to drug treatment services. There are models in the state where we do that well, like in Sheridan, for example, and yet we don't import those models nearly as far as we should be doing. By the way, you do that right, it saves a lot of money over the long term because it reduces recidivism, but here we are obsessed with a penny today and always foregoing the dollar tomorrow. Obsessed with a penny today and always foregoing justice today as well. That's not right. We need to make sure that not only theoretical education programs, but specific job training programs that are designed around what jobs are available exist inside the justice system. We've all heard this famous example of the fact that for years there were programs inside our justice system to train people while incarcerated how to cut hair, but you couldn't have a license to be a barber in Illinois if you had a criminal record. Come on. We need to have a system where everybody is sitting at the table, and yes, that includes those of us working for the state of Illinois, but it also includes employers, it also includes community colleges, it also includes high schools, it also includes regulators, to make sure that the training and the vocational assistance that exists inside the state of Illinois, inside the correctional system, is designed to make sure that jobs actually will be available. And then finally, we need to remove more bars to employment and create the kind of wraparound services upon reentry that ease entry into the job market. That means, again, spending some money now on some services that, yes, will save a whole bunch of money later when we have people working instead of being incarcerated, but it's also the just and the correct thing to do. If you surround people upon reentry with needed services and the ability to have housing and coaching and assistance, you push people right back into the workplace. If you put people upon return into the neighborhood without any network of supports whatsoever, you are creating an incredibly difficult situation where the odds are against folks. So that's utterly crucial. And then you asked about crime survivors. We have an epidemic of violence in parts of Illinois. We have an epidemic of violence that is tearing apart neighborhoods and families and communities in certain parts of Illinois and leaving chunks of Illinois more or less untouched, leaving people in Illinois not always understanding that we as one human family have a responsibility to solve these problems together. And so there's a whole number of things that need to be done. First of all, making sure, particularly for children, that trauma-informed services are available in school and out of school, that we surround children who are existing in neighborhoods with significant levels of violence and experiencing trauma, perhaps in their own household, perhaps in their own family, that their access to proper services are fully available. These counseling supports don't only exist and need not only exist for children, they have to exist well beyond that. We enacted not too long ago, a constitutional amendment protecting rights of victims of crimes. And that creates a kind of a baseline in the legal system itself, but it doesn't go very far when it comes to actually providing the kind of services and supports that are necessary to provide for a victim of crime so that instead of having another cycle of painful violence, we as a family, a human family, step up together and wrap around people who have been victims of crimes the kind of supports needed to end the cycle and end the violence. That's what we're going to fight for when we're governor and lieutenant governor, and I appreciate the question very much.
Hello, Senator. Kadeen Bennett with the ACLU of Illinois. As you may know, the current governor declared that criminal justice was going to be a top priority for his administration. He set a goal of reducing the prison population 25% by 2025. He appointed members to a bipartisan commission. They developed 27 recommendations that get to that goal. While there's been some movement on a few of those recommendations, many of the recommendations that actually get to the goal, including raising the felony theft threshold, reclassifying drug sentences, reducing excessive sentencing, hasn't moved. If you were to become governor, would you support moving those recommendations? And can you tell me what concrete steps you would take to actually get movement towards that end?
Thank you, Kadeen. And if you don't mind me embarrassing you, Kadeen Bennett is one of the great rock stars in Illinois who is fighting on behalf of the ACLU in Springfield every day, relentlessly, and with remarkable, remarkable success. And thank you for your work, which has changed countless lives in Illinois. Thank you, Kadeen. The answer is yes. And let's talk about this, because I kind of alluded to this earlier on, but I was a little vague because I was being polite. It is really easy here in 2018 to say you're for criminal justice reform. That's good news. That's progress. Wasn't like that when I started running for office 10 years ago. Most people didn't talk about criminal justice reform that much, and now they say they're for criminal justice reform. That's good news. And Bruce Rauner says he's for it, and that's good news. And he set that important and ambitious goal of reducing the prison population by 25%, and that was good news. And he impaneled that commission to put forth very bold recommendations, and that was good news. And he signed some of the politically easiest bills on that list, and that was good news. And I'm kind of running out of good news, because there are things on that list that you enumerated that are politically challenging. There are things on that list that aren't necessarily so feel good politically. You know how we got here. We got here because of a politics that equated being, quote, tough on crime with being pro-public safety. And a politics that said if you were running for office, you had to tell folks that you were tough on crime. And what that meant was locking people up for longer and longer and locking more people up and throwing away more keys. We got here because a whole generation of politicians was raised on the fact that when Mike Dukakis tried to run for president, George H.W. Bush ran a racist commercial against him with a picture of Willie Horton in it because he had furloughed someone. And all of a sudden, a generation of politicians was scared to talk about any kind of smart policies on criminal justice reform. And so we've seen important progress, and I'm happy about it, but that progress is at risk of hitting a dead end when it comes to the politically harder conversations. That's why I talked about how sentencing conversations has to be about more than just low-level nonviolent drug offenses, because You don't fix mass incarceration by only addressing low-level nonviolent drug offenses. We have to go through the precise list of items that you enumerated, Kadeen, and more. And I am for it, and I am ready to have those hard conversations. I have never shied away from those tough votes while a state senator and a state representative, and I've never shied away from these hard conversations, even in the politically precarious position of being a candidate for governor. But the end of your question was my favorite part, because I mean, who cares what the governor thinks on some level? Who cares what just that one person is willing to do? There's 118 members of the House. There's 59 members of the Senate. They're not 118 Jahan Gordon Booths, unfortunately. There's not a 59 Dave Kalers, unfortunately. Well, 58 Dave Kalers and one Daniel Biss, I guess. And we've got a lot of work to do together if we want to make these important steps. Now, I think we should acknowledge that the progress we've made so far is real in terms of moving the needle, but the risk is that we're going to declare victory and go home instead of saying, okay, now for the hard and most crucial parts. So what do I commit to do as governor? Several things. Number one, I commit to have this conversation everywhere I go, a conversation about how there are still way more steps to take than have been taken so far, and some of those steps are going to involve doing things that are right and smart and data-informed and fair and just and moral, but might look kind of tricky on a campaign mailer with blaring giant type and race-baiting pictures. And if we're not willing to vote for things and pass things that expose us to that risk, then we're not going to fix this problem. I'm going to talk about that everywhere I go. As the governor of the state, I'll provide political support for legislators who are willing to take those tough, tough decisions, knowing that it's risky, but knowing that it's right. And you don't just do that by writing a campaign check. You do that by building up a political movement around these reform ideas, by traveling the state and talking in community centers and church basements and public television studios about what needs to be done, and then investing in real organizing so there are people out in the neighborhood knocking on doors and talking about what a just criminal justice system actually looks like and how that creates racial justice and equity and economic opportunity. We have to understand that to get the Illinois that we need, to get the Illinois that I believe we deserve, to get the Illinois that I believe we've deserved for a long time but have not really seen as in our political sights, we got to change the way we think about politics and change the way we think about organizing and change the formula that we use to think about what's possible in Springfield. I'm running for governor because I know that if we do another couple generations of what's been possible for the last couple generations and call it a day, we're in a lot of trouble. I'm running because it's time to change what's possible. And now I've got 3 minutes to close, which I guess there's no question. The question is, Daniel, what are your final 3 minutes? Thank you. I'm so glad we're here today. I'm so glad we're having this conversation today. I'll just close here. Every year on King Day, regardless of what else I do, whatever events I go to and speeches and performances I listen to and commemorative activities I participate in, I make sure to sit down quietly and read the letter from the Birmingham jail once more. I do that every year. And I think the lessons in that letter are universal and they're powerful and they're important for every person. They're important for us to live every day. I think they're really important for us to think about in the context of this issue. It is so easy when it comes to real transformational change around economic justice and economic opportunity and criminal justice to say later is the right time. It is so easy to say there is a tricky election coming up. There is a difficult conversation we're going to have next year. Let's not worry too much about having the tough conversation about what a truly just sentencing system looks like. Or it might be easy to say, let's reform sentences going forward, but let's not do any kind of look backs because what's done is done. Don't worry about it any longer. It's always easier to do less. It's always easy to find an excuse for why we can only do less than what we know we really should do. And it's always easy for someone to say it's somebody else's responsibility to take the heat. I'm just going to keep on going on with my life. Let us not do that. Let us acknowledge the crisis that we have in Peoria and in Illinois and, quite frankly, in America around racial justice, around economic opportunity in the black community, and around criminal justice. Let us understand the connectedness between those issues, and let us understand that the solution to these issues lies within our hands, not with a magic wand, not with a magic trick, not with the politics we've had before, but by all of us coming together to build a new politics and enact the solutions that are there, if only the votes are there. I'm Daniel Biss. I'm running for governor to build that movement and change this state, and it's an honor to be with you today. Thank you.